This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Drew Noon and Rachel Williams. How are you guys?
Yeah, good, thanks, Chris.
Very well, thank you, Chris. Thanks for having us.
You guys are both in McLaren Vale in South Australia. And this week, so we're going to talk a wee bit about phylloxera. But before we get into that, let's just have a quick find out about yourself. Rachel, do you tell us who you work for and what your roles are?
Sure. I'm the Grower Engagement Officer at McLaren Vale Grape Wine and Tourism. So McLaren Vale Grape Wine and Tourism is a member-based organisation that works with grape growers and wine producers and also tourist operators in the McLaren Vale wine region, which is about 40 kilometres drive south of Adelaide near the coast.
I've only been to McLaren Vale once, but I always feel like I'm driving up a hill all the way there, but I don't think it is.
It's not far enough.
Well, it ranges, I guess it's sort of quite, it ranges a bit in its geography in that it starts at the coast.
Yeah.
So obviously at sea level. And then it does go up towards the range, but what would that be?
A couple of hundred metres up at Clarendon, like at the top end.
So it is quite diverse in its geography and geology.
Okay. And Drew, tell us about yourself. You're a winemaker and master of wine, obviously, but tell us about just briefly about yourself.
Yeah, Chris. So I grew up on a vineyard here in McLaren Vale, and after a period away making wine for others and bigger organisations, I came back to take over from my parents and with my lovely wife, Ray, and that's what we do today. But it's small production.
How many hectares have you got?
I always think in acres. We got 14 acres. What's that?
Like 7 hectares?
A bit less.
Yeah, six hectares.
Six, something like that. Yeah.
Okay, so you're about the size of a typical English vineyard, which is quite niche and small.
And we work with a family who grows some Shiraz and Cabernet for us at Langhorne Creek, adjoining region too, Chris. So we grow about half on the property here and half comes from them.
I was having a look on your website and you've got the cutest little baby presses that I've ever seen.
Well, that's all we need.
Normally a basket press anyway, which is what you've got, you know, they're normally quite big things, and your one you can almost wrap your arms around. It's lovely.
You could if you had long arms you could. Yeah, no, that's all we need.
Cool. Anyway, what we're going to talk about today is a little bit about phylloxera. And South Australia is one of these unique areas that is surrounded by phylloxera, but you don't actually have phylloxera in South Australia. So it's a very important thing for you guys to keep out. But before we get too far into it, what is phylloxera for the listeners?
So it's an insect that lives in the soil, or most of its life in the soil, and feeds on the vine roots and kills the vines.
Yeah.
Came from America via Europe, turned up in Australia in the 1800s. Strangely and luckily, it's been isolated to a small area in Victoria till recently. We had quite a scare in 2006. It moved from the traditional areas in central and northeastern Victoria, so that's around Nagambie, if you know. Shout out to Bilk, is an old winery in that region. They've had phylloxera there for a long time, and up in the northeast of Victoria around the Rutherglen district.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, by a lot of good luck, probably as much as good, and no, I shouldn't be, a lot of good management too. There were a lot of restrictions put in place once people woke up to what was causing the vines to die and how to stop it, and that's quite simple, really. The insect won't crawl from one region to another in, you know, hundreds of years. You've got to move, but it gets moved by people moving soil or bits of plant. Anyway, so we put lots of restrictions on the movement of that stuff, but it stayed out of South Australia. But alarmingly, in 2006, it turned up in the Yarra Valley, and that's the first time it had moved significantly in that 100 years plus, and that's a big wake-up call. So South Australia is still phylloxera free, but we have to be very careful. It's a great advantage not to have to graft vines onto rootstocks, to be able to grow them on their own roots. We can talk about that. But some of those are economics, some are quality, some there's all sorts of advantages. But, gee, yeah, now that it's sort of moved, everybody's, it's got a big fright. And
But Yarra Valley's still miles away from you guys. I mean, Yarra Valley's in Victoria, right beside Melbourne, and you guys are South Australia. So there's hundreds of kilometres between those two areas.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So the risk is us. Unfortunately, Chris, people like to move stuff around for economics, you see. If you can set up, and one of the models that, for example, Foster's Treasury have worked on here is a big winery, a big central winery, and then truck all your grapes in. Rather than lots of little processing facilities, if I can call them that, wineries, in the regions, they set up a huge one, for example, in the Barossa at Wolf Blass, a facility that they, and tracking grapes everywhere. And that's, so economically, that's terrific, but it's very complicated if you don't want to move phylloxera around. So there's a tension between the economic imperative and the desire not to move phylloxera.
Yeah, yeah, no, okay, I can see that. I remember I did a trip out to, there's a point in that New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia all come together in one sort of corner. Yeah. And there was a winery up there that I visited years and years ago, Robinson, I think they're called. They're a biodynamic producer. And I remember driving all the way up there one morning, hungover as well. It was a massive drive and first trip into
the... It is a big drive up there.
Yeah, yeah. I drove up there and back in one day with... hungover all the way out there, and I was fine by the way back, but pretty tired. And I remember coming back, and I got stopped and checked for phylloxera on the way in, and they were particularly keen on things like apples and all sorts of weird stuff.
Fruit fly is another one.
So there's definitely some biosecurity going on in Australia when you move between different states, etc.
Absolutely.
There is, and the big risk, of course, is for phylloxera, is in this tension between wanting to grow on own roots and phylloxera being present, is that 80-odd% of the vines in South Australia were growing on their own roots. So if we had an incursion, an outbreak, it's going to decimate slowly in the sort of 5 to 10 year term, quickly in the lifetime of vine, it's going to mean all of it. We're going to lose all our old vines. All have to be replanted, all on rootstocks. It's really important to keep it out.
Just for the listeners, why is rootstock quite important for them?
So the rootstocks come from America, where the pest comes from, and the vines of the American species have developed a natural defense system, so they can tolerate and live with phylloxera without being killed or debilitated too much by it. So if you take one of the American root systems and graft your European, graft your Cabernet Sauvignon or Shiraz, whatever you want on top, on the American roots, you can have phylloxera present and it won't kill the vine, yeah.
And that's quite common. You said 80% of South Australia or McLaren Vale's on its own rootstock. Is that right? That seems an awfully high number.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's higher. The only place... It's higher in McLaren Vale and the Barossa and so on, the traditional area. It's the only place where we have, the reason that there's 20% or so is in the Riverland, where you went, the long drive, the Riverland and further, there's a lot of sandy, irrigated vineyards on quite sandy soils there, and they have a big nematode problem. That's another insect that doesn't kill vines, but it reduces productivity. So they graft they plant a lot of vines on rootstocks there for nematode resistance. So they do have a lot of grafted vines in that region, but it's not for phylloxera.
Okay, that's interesting because sandy soils, phylloxera doesn't like sandy soils.
That's right. You got nematodes instead. You got sand, you got nematodes, and you got clay, you got phylloxera. That's pretty much it. There's an insect for every occasion.
Just so the listeners know, nematodes are a type of worm. They're a tiny, tiny worm-like critter, aren't they?
Yes, exactly.
Because a lot of people graft, and they may graft for phylloxera or nematodes or whatever. But there are advantages for grafting. For example, you can match the vigorousness of the rootstock to the soils. So if you're in a high vigor soil, you can use a rootstock that's better adapted to that. If you're in a low vigor or lime soils, you can match the rootstocks to it. So
you can, or you could just grow vines where they want to be on their own roots. Yeah, so it opens up a whole lot of other options, but it makes life a lot more complicated. And is it better? I don't know. But there are certainly circumstances where you couldn't successfully or happily grow as well without rootstocks. That's true.
And you're saying McLaren Vale, 80%. And I know it's cheaper to plant vines without grafting. Is it a cost reason that they still plant? Are they still planting now with on their own rootstocks, or are they? Yeah. Is it a cost reason? Because obviously,
To answer your question a bit more fully, although a lot of people, because of in the interest of caution in the future, people are planting grafted vines as an insurance against phylloxera mostly. Yeah, but still a lot of people are planting own root vines, and so the advantages, yeah, well, cost is a big one. Always gets people. So, you know, let's just say round figures $1 or $1.50 for a rootling for an ungrafted vine, and maybe $4 or $5 for a grafted plant per vine. And you're planting a few thousand of them a hectare, or it depends on. It's a big cost, a big extra cost to go with grafted. And then so there's the cost, and then there's the chances of getting it wrong. So if you don't match, is what you're alluding to before. The advantage is you can match stocks to soils and varieties, but the disadvantage is you can get a mismatch or it not so well matched, and then you have problems. And then there is other sort of practical issues about, you can get around these, but just adds to the complication of things, is that rootstock can bring viruses to the plant that can debilitate the plant. So you need really good, healthy, clean rootstock material. And that's not all that widely available, because we don't have phylloxera, we don't have a big demand, we don't have a big nursery industry in American roots here because we don't use them much. So, and I would argue further that I kind of alluded to before, that why would you if you don't have to? That isn't it better to plant, to grow a vine on the roots that nature developed for it if you can? And sure, if you have a problem, then you have to. But if you don't have to, apart from cost and risks and matching and all the complications, why would you want to anyway? Like, isn't it potentially a better reflection of terroir and the natural environment to grow on their own roots? So I would if I could.
I don't know this, but do you think you can taste any difference in the wine between a normal rootstock and an indigenous rootstock, an American rootstock or an indigenous rootstock?
Own roots, very complicated to know, because as you said, the stocks tend to alter somewhat the vigor and so on. It's very hard to compare, you know, to know whether it's a direct rootstock effect or whether it's an indirect rootstock effect. Mm. But either way, whether it is indirect or direct, you can definitely influence the quality by grafting. Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, Rachel, you're in charge of the tourist, and I had a look at your website, and you've got the cutest video on there about this dirty great yellow phylloxera. First of all, is phylloxera really 6 foot tall? Because...
No, I think that's a great video that was put out by Vine Health Australia, which is our sort of biosecurity of our vineyards here in South Australia. But yeah, no, I think that was definitely a consumer facing video, which was, I guess, really to alert people to the fact that there's a really big trend, particularly with Instagram these days, of jumping into a vineyard and taking a selfie or taking a photo and uploading it on Instagram, because it's a fantastic backdrop, which is obviously a really good thing. But I guess one of the worries, I mean, there's all sorts of biosecurity issues that come along with that, even if you're just going from vineyard to vineyard in the same region. But if someone has spent 2 weeks in the Yarra Valley and then taken a two-hour flight and drive straight to McLaren Vale wearing the same shoes, then there's every possibility that they can spread phylloxera that way, because only they can survive for 21 days without any food or water. So it's actually it really is a possibility. So I think, yeah, Vine Health Australia put that out just to raise a bit of awareness, and I think it worked quite well. But I think you can't really see them, can you? They're so tiny. I guess that's one of the problems, is they're really hard to detect because they are completely opposite of Phil the phylloxera. They're very, very small and live under the ground.
Phil the phylloxera is a it was a person dressed up in a bright yellow phylloxera suit, you know. I love the bit where he's sitting there drinking along with his mates in the vineyard, and they're going, you know,
and they're unaware.
You can't see him, but he's there. And he's like, yeah. I thought it was brilliant. I laughed my way through that. I thought that was a great video. But it does raise the issue that, you know, I normally think of phylloxera spreading on the tires and tractors and things like that. You know, that's where you get a big bit of mud in there. But if it spreads so easy just in the soles of shoes, I'm surprised that, you know, South Australia has managed to stay phylloxera free for so long. You would have thought it would have been transported long before that. Is it a bit like COVID, where every now and then you might get a small infection, but then it dies out? You know, so some people get exposed to COVID, they don't catch it because the there's just not enough of the virus in their system to catch and reproduce and get going, and they sort of effectively have a bit of immunity for it. Do you think phylloxera, if one little bit louse gets across the border into South Australia, it's all over, or does it need a sort of population size, or what's going on there? Do you know?
That's a good question. I don't know what the minimum population size would be.
No, it's all over, Chris. No, it's all over. One's enough. They're asexual. They don't even need a partner. All they need to find is a vine root, and they can start a whole new infection. So it's not like COVID or a small exposure. Any one insect gets here, we've had it potentially. Yeah.
Really, really. That is quite high risk. I know chili.
We know. It's scary. And the point of the, as you were talking about, Rach, but the, so there's a tourism risk as well. So as you said, rightly, the biggest risk has got to be people within the wine-growing community moving it.
And harvesters.
Vine material. But there is even a risk, of people moving it on their shoes. So, and the interesting thing, I've had this conversation with members of my extended family and so on, and it's really just, this is what that Phil the Phylloxera thing was trying to do, is educate. People are not, wouldn't dream of moving it. You know, they just have no idea that taking a selfie in a vineyard in the Yarra and coming here and taking a selfie could. So it's a matter of letting people know. They're with you if they just don't understand the risk. So trying to get that message out to people, wine tourists, as well as to the industry. Because it's also, dare I say it, but like with all businesses, there are smaller vineyards and operators who probably aren't aware of it either, you know, in our own community.
If I want my shoes cleaned and I'm going to New Zealand, I just tell them in immigration that I've been out for a walk in the country in England, and they'll take your shoes away and they'll give them a really good clean.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant. But you don't
they do
any...
that in Australia,
true. Oh, they do. Yeah, in the way in, but not between states.
Well, they do ask you if you've been onto any sort of farmland or any country areas before you get off, if you're coming internationally.
Yeah.
And even interstate, they often, like, you have to, they'll go past the quarantine dogs if you're coming in from Victoria to pick up on any fruit or anything like that you might be carrying.
Phil, you mentioned that phylloxera spends most of its time in the soil, but it does have quite a complicated life cycle. And I know during parts of its life, it heads up into the vine.
Well, interesting, because you're right. That's been observed in Europe. That's never been observed in Australia. We don't have above-ground phylloxera. There is a winged form. As you said, it's quite a complicated life cycle. And frighteningly, it has been observed in Europe at certain stages of the life cycle to come out of the soil, grow wings, and fly. That's my worst nightmare. That's never been observed in Australia. What it does do in Australia is crawl out of the soil, particularly during about this time of year, during harvest, up into the above ground parts of the vine. And then, of course, that's why harvesting, particularly machine harvesting, you can knock it off and have it in fruit.
Okay. And then,
but that's the same bug here, not the wing.
And transporting, say, material from Yarra Valley to processing centres in South Australia, you could potentially have quite a lot of phylloxera in your grapes there. How do they manage that?
Well, it's not allowed.
Oh, it's not allowed anymore.
For that reason, yeah.
Different wine regions are categorised depending on their phylloxera status. So then there's very strict rules about movement of machinery and grapes and even wine, I guess, isn't there, between those regions.
Not
so,
wine.
Yeah.
Oh, not wine, sorry. Grapes and material, is what I mean, between those regions.
And how do you kill it? I mean, I presume things like sulfur dioxide, which is what you use as an antioxidant for a lot of stuff on the grapes, that probably doesn't do anything to it, or does it?
It does, but it's not. So way back in the day when vineyards in France were first dying, they used to try fumigating soil and stuff, but in effect that's difficult. And obviously these days, in any day, concern for the environment, that's not a great idea. I've seen them actually in California put plastic sheets on the ground and sort of try and fumigate under. But it's not really, that's not, no, you can't kill. It's difficult to kill in the ground. So the best way to kill it is temperature. So one of the disinfestation methods, if you want to move a machine harvester from out of the state into South Australia, you have to put it into a heat shed. You have to clean it first thoroughly and pull it apart, clean it, steam it, and then it goes into a heat shed where it's held at above, let's say 40. It's not, let's say 45. It's not that hot. But for a period of time, and that'll kill it. Because it, remember, it's the natural environment is in the soil is fairly cool. So heat will kill it. And then, of course, as you're alluding to with sulfur dioxide, if you crush the grapes at a winery and ferment the wine, then the wine's safe. You know, you can transport the wine around into South Australia and so on. So that's how you get around moving. If you want to move something into the state, you've got to crush it and ferment it. Yeah.
Okay, so that's quite important because you see a lot of wines that are southeastern Australia. You know, that's a blend of all sorts of different regions. So they'll make the wines locally or in a centre in that state.
Yes.
And then move the finished product for blending.
Yes, exactly. Or they have a permit to move it because it's from an area where it's recognised that phylloxera isn't there. Yeah.
We were chatting earlier that you said phylloxera isn't just a single insect. You know, I always think of it as Phil the phylloxera, big yellow jumpsuit, you know. But tell me about it. Is there more than one type of phylloxera?
Well, yeah, there are many, actually. We call them biotypes, or the scientists call them biotypes. And interestingly, they have different properties. So some are more aggressive in the damage they do to own-rooted vines. Some are actually more aggressive to particular species of American roots. So there are some biotypes that will get around, you know, some American roots are resistant to some biotypes feeding on them, but other biotypes they're not. So it does get complicated. There is a whole range of different phylloxeras with different properties, yes.
Okay, it's like anything, they mutate to overcome the obstacles they've got in front of them type of situation.
Yeah. And we have, I forget now in Australia, but the Vine Health ladies could tell you, but maybe 20 plus biotypes. Like, and that's just here in France and in, who knows, in America, hundreds.
Yeah.
There are a lot, and they're quite distinctly different, so yes.
How did, you said phylloxera came in really early on in the 1800s or whatever. How did it get here, do you know? Get there, do you know?
No, but we know that the earliest detections were in Geelong, which is just west of Melbourne. Mm-hmm. So, and it moved from there before anyone really had these movement restrictions. So before it, we were aware of the risks and what was going on. It moved into central Victoria and then up to northeast Victoria. And interestingly, in reaction, the Victorian government said, phylloxera, you know, it's killing the vineyards of France. Let's pull out all the vines. And they started in Geelong where the first infection was, and they, you know, moved in and ripped out vineyards. And then by the time they got in towards Bendigo, central Victoria, they ran out of steam and sort of political will, and the farmers were arcing up and so on. And I think perhaps the timing was such that people had discovered that American roots were resistant, so there was kind of a cure or an out. And anyway, it remained in central Victoria and northeast Victoria where it had got to, but it's not, there are vines back on their own roots in Geelong today. They were successful in eradicating it from Geelong.
Oh, really? Okay. So you just got to rip it out, let the soil, leave it for a couple of years to kill it off, and then you're away again.
Yeah, well, good point. A couple of years. So they think at least 7 years fallow, because if you chop a vine top off or rip it off or whatever, if there's no above ground part of the vine, particularly if you were talking about a vine that had an extensive root system, an older vine, the roots will stay viable for, 5 to 10 years, and so the phylloxera can live on the roots. So to really eradicate it, you've got to leave it a long time after you pull the vines out before you can be sure it's not still there.
All right, then. I think we'll wrap it up there, guys. Thank you very much, Rachel. Thank you very much, Drew.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.